I'm gonna be there too.
All right, so my plan for today, when people see paper and pencil, they start to go, oh. But my plan for today is give you a piece of paper, give you a couple minutes to just write down, if you can think of any, write down a question or two about Buddhism, about Zen, about practice that you have, that is alive for you, or a topic, doesn't have to necessarily be a question. And then I will collect them and address them one at a time. And maybe won't get through all of them, but then I'll have some great questions for, because sometimes I'm sitting and I'm like, you know, what should I talk about? I'm like, and I just have to guess, what do people care about? What are they interested in? What would be helpful? I don't really know sometimes. So, I mean, I know what would be helpful to me, but then I just repeat myself all the time. So, anyway, if you don't end up having a question, that's fine. If you have more than one, I suggest you put a little. Can you start handing those out? If you have more than one, go ahead and maybe star the one that you want me to address first, because I'll kind of go through.
Thank you. You want two pieces of paper? One. Thank you. Oh. I'm kidding. I can't hold the other two. Would you like? You got two pieces.
Oh, yes, you. Park surface.
Acceptance and motivation to improve and push forward. Whew. Acceptance on the one hand and motivation to improve and push forward on the other. I guess what springs to my mind is a like the 2 feet in walking image of like one without the other wouldn't work. So I don't know, I feel like sometimes it's a like kind of like feet in walking, it is an alternating thing. That this moment, this hour, this day is for a time for acceptance. And this hour, this day is a time for learning and working and, you know, a motivation. And I don't know, there's a, I found that, I mean, I was highly motivated by the desire to improve and achieve and et cetera. And it led me to be very, I don't know, unsatisfied, because I was never good enough, right? I'm never where I actually want to be. There's always room for improvement, right? So there was a lack of acceptance and a kind of stress and bitterness and comparison and various things like that. And I found that, you know, and working on acceptance, I mean, that was a really big part of my practice, was just a beautiful way that my teacher, one of the teachers at Dharma Rain put it, Chico, she said, joining the human race, just becoming just like everybody who's like doing their best, has their quirks, has their strengths and weaknesses, and just that I'm never going to be anything other than that, and that's okay. Like, in what sense? It's really okay. I know that my some of you may have heard this before, but there's a metaphor, if you will, parable in the Lotus Sutra, where all the disciples of the Buddha are lining up and they're asking for their prediction of Buddhahood. And so he'll say, oh yes, Linda, in 2 eons, you are going to be reborn as Bodhisattva so-and-so, and you're going to achieve perfect enlightenment, and then you're going to be a Buddha, and this is what your Buddha field is going to look like, and all that. So then you know, like, oh, me too? I'm going to be a Buddha too? I mean, it'll take a while, but that's okay, you know? And I hated that parable. I'm like, first of all, like, why am I going to ask, oh, please, Buddha, give me your, you know, prediction for me? Why do I want to go to anybody else and ask for their prediction? I don't need their prediction of Buddhahood. Like, I'm going to earn it myself, right? I'm going to get there myself. And I don't know, at some point, I remember in some session, just things came together, and I accessed the part of myself that just, like, I want to get in line for my prediction of Buddhahood too. Like, just, and that simplicity and that humility and that acceptance, I guess, was very, very healing. And then it's like, then the efforts to improve, I guess, or learn or become more skillful are, I don't know, they're taken with a much lighter heart. They're not about my inherent worthiness. They're just, you know, I mean, as long as we're on this planet, we might as well get better at what we do. We might as well get wiser. We might as well learn stuff. Might as well learn to be a little kinder. And, you know, so it's like there's a more of a optional, free, generous feeling about that effort. So let me open it up then and see. Anybody else have any thoughts or ideas about this? Acceptance versus motivation to improve.
Is it as simple as the serenity prayer?
And yeah, it is as simple, but it's not as simple. It's not a simple thing to really do. I think you're right, though. That's a similar similar attitude.
Cannot change. Period. And you dial to. You know, we try to, you know, change the fact that my father's dead.
Right. Right.
You cannot change.
Yeah. And then there's the whole spectrum in between. Yeah. There's like the things you cannot change, the things that you really can like change. And then, you know, so there is that wrestling in with things where you have that aspiration to change and yet it doesn't seem very easily changed. And is this something you should bother to try to change? Or is it something you should just accept? I mean, there's really no, you know, for most things, it's not a black or white thing. It's not a all or nothing.
It's like the cousin to my question, which will be obvious when you get into it. It's like, can acceptance include the acceptance of the one who wants to improve?
Mm.
Isn't acceptance the bigger state, and the one that wants to improve happens inside of it? So is there anything there to be skeptical or worried about?
That sounds good to me. And there's a way that we can be compassionate with that being that will always feel inadequate. You know? Linda, you.
I was just gonna say, thinking of it like when you're sitting in meditation and your mind is wandering, and then you kind of come back to the present moment again and again and again, and it's kind of like acceptance, and you're trying to make these changes, and then you find yourself on this other, falling off that path of the positive change, and then it's like, oh, come back, and it's like, okay, let's refresh our intention.
Yeah. So there's that way that acceptance is the ground of change, which is why we start with the karma verse in the morning. All my past and harmful karma, born from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. It's like, yeah, accepting. I was saying something recently as well, like acceptance being about what's up till now. And then our bodhisattva vows, our intentions are about where do we go from here.
Well, it was, I think the motivation for change for me would come from a belief based on what I read and hear, that there will come a point in time when I will recognize I'm fine. I'm enough.
Even given the progress that I've made in that area, it's amazing how subtly the sense can creep back in that, like, yeah, not quite good enough, not quite this isn't who I'm ultimately gonna be. I'm gonna give me some time. I'm gonna get better. I'm gonna realize this. I'm gonna become more skilled. Like, my mind set on, and I guess an ideal or something, as opposed to just what is. All right. Definitely not going to get through them all, am I? Not a specific question, but can you talk about refuge? So we said at initial chants of the Sunday morning, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. Refuge. And I've done some, I love to look into words, and the word or the terms that we're translating as refuge also have a aspect to them that are entrustment. I entrust myself to the Buddha. I entrust myself to the Dharma. I entrust myself to the Sangha. So in a way, that sense of refuge like, I'm going to go huddle under the Buddha's robes against the terrors of the world, is a kind of a limited image. Although there's an aspect of that as well. There's an aspect, so when we have in our Kyoju Kaimon, our Bodhisattva precept booklet, it starts off with the karma verse. I confess, all right, here we are, this is, I accept my past harmful deeds. And then they say, right after you do that, and you kind of open up and you kind of become vulnerable, you should immediately take refuge. So the next thing then is refuge, whereas the refuge is first. And anyway, immediately after you take refuge, because now that you've opened up and you're looking for a new way, it's you want to go to a tradition, go to a community, go to a set of precepts, go to all these aspects of our practice that will help support you, will give you some safety and shelter, some I don't know, something to hold on to in a way, something to ground yourself, and something to entrust yourself to. Now that you're kind of, there's that aspect of the karma verse and way-seeking mind where you go like, I don't know what to do. It's got to be a better way. I don't know what to do. And so we say, well, people really recommend these three treasures. And it looks like people who take refuge in these three treasures like turn out to be pretty decent people. So I think I'm gonna entrust myself to this process. Yeah.
I'm trying to find the right words. So I think that's a lovely answer. I'm trying to discern. You said open yourself up and become vulnerable, and then you take refuge in the three treasures. There seems to be a very fine hair or less of being with that vulnerability, and that you have the capacity, willingness, while you're in a refuge, to still stay present with whatever discomfort or vulnerability has mm-hmm. arisen within you, mm-hmm. as opposed to just going to spiritual bypass mm-hmm. and diverting yourself away from that discomfort and bringing healing to it. Is that clear?
I think so. Okay. And I think it's a good point in the sense that, I think particularly in our world, we're more familiar with spiritual paths or religions where you take refuge, like, now you're going to give me the answers, or...
Now I won't have to feel my discomfort. I'm not even going to talk about it because I'm just going to go to God and I can sense he pretend that discomfort is not even there.
Right, so it's kind of like it's the end of the vulnerable process. Now we're good. Now that you've taken Christ as your Savior, it's all good. But of course, even folks who engage in that practice, if they're really engaging it in a, you know, a deep spiritual way, from my perspective, you know, that's definitely not the end of the process. You know, taking refuge in Christ, trying to live in a Christ-like way, like this is something to be explored. This is something to be repeatedly recognize our inadequacy and to face it and to aspire. So yeah, I think it is important to
maybe it's whether you reach that place of vulnerability and bring that Christ-like compassion, since you mentioned Christ or the refuge, to that vulnerability, so you still can rest in that space, as opposed to saying, oh, I hit that vulnerability, oh, that hurt, I'm going to throw it away, I'm God, here I am, and I don't have to get any closer to that vulnerability.
And that's also why, like, we recite that Kyoju Kaimon with the karma verse and the refuges and the precepts, like, over and over. We see it as kind of a cycle. So in a way, we're continuing going back to that place of confession, of openness, of way-seeking mind. And if we don't, our practice gets kind of stale. I mean, sometimes it gets kind of stale anyway. We don't really have a lot of say in that. We're like, oh, nothing's really happened recently. But then eventually something challenges us. Old age, disease, and death, if nothing else, challenges us. And then we're back in that place of kind of, I don't know, and I want to explore more. And then we take refuge again. And then this is why we, you know, chant the refuges over and over. Other thoughts on refuge?
Just one thought on the question. For me, when I come into practice, I get away from practice. When I surrender and kind of come back in, I'll actually have a rough patch for a couple of weeks. I mean, like, what's going on? I should feel better. And what I find is that taking refuge makes space for the crap that needs to be dealt with to come in. So I got to work through this. That's been my experience.
I like to think of the Dharma, well, all three treasures, but as a refuge that, that will deconstruct our attachments. It'll deconstruct, like, even if we go to them for the wrong reasons, like, they'll take care of it. It's all just built in to bring us back to that place of questioning, or to have us face our stuff, or challenge our ego, or whatever. So in a way, it's like, it doesn't really matter, you know, even if it's just like, I just want to go to meditate so I'm calm and I don't have to deal with all this stuff. But that's not the nature of meditation. You know, it's gonna, I mean, we have to work really hard to use it incorrectly. I mean, especially if Sangha's involved. Maybe if we're off by ourselves, just trying to navigate our own practice, but that's part of, you know, interacting with Sangha and teachers and tradition. That'll make us, it'll challenge us.
I like your going back and looking at the translation, because sometimes I feel like refuge is very passive sounding and not more like a action-y thing that we're doing.
Well, and maybe it's more like, and we're not entrusting ourselves, like, okay, there we go. Now it's stopped. I entrusted myself, and there I am, sitting inside the three refuges. Like, that's not how life works, you know. So in a way, we're entrusting ourselves to this practice. We're turning over our lives to be shaped by this. Yeah, I like that. I guess refuge does sound a little, passive, and yeah. And it's one act, like, you go, now you're in the refuge. You don't have to do anything. Any other thoughts or one more question? And then I will have more to have subsequent sessions on. All right. How does Buddhism beautify, treat, heal? Is this what is a language for individuals to help grow self-awareness. I am going to, unless whoever wrote it wants to speak up, I'm going to treat those as two separate questions. How does Buddhism beautify, treat, and heal? I think is a beautiful question. It's true that in a lot of our practice, like original Buddhism and aspects of Zen, can be very sometimes come off very non-self-affirming, would be one way to put it, of just original Buddhism is about all things change, don't look for permanent refuge in conditioned things, and let go of any kind of self-attachment, and it's a moving on, letting go, and cutting through the self-attachment, and the idea is the ideal is the monk who's not married, who doesn't listen to music, who doesn't wear fancy clothes, so that life-affirming aspect of Buddhism, I think, all traditions have their strengths and weaknesses. So I would probably admit that this is one of Buddhism's, and I don't know if it's necessarily a weakness, but it's just, kind of built into the system is like it kind of lacks that aspect of it. Just like it kind of lacks, when you go to other kinds of spiritual gatherings and celebrations and there's music. And you sing, and then like when I, sing a hymn and a beautiful, amazing grace will get tears rolling down my cheeks. And yeah, so, and sometimes we touch on inspiring things here, but it's usually not, it doesn't have that kind of that warm emotional quality that leaves you just going, oh, I just love the Dharma. I just love the ineffable. And there's reasons why we don't emphasize the emotional too much, but I guess in reality, we do have to take care of this life and appreciate this life. I was so inspired to hear the Dalai Lama came to speak quite a long time ago, University of Portland, 2004 or something like that. Anyway, I don't remember a thing he said except for this one phrase, which is pretty typical for like a Dharma talk. But, and he said, "You have to have a strong sense of self in order to do this practice." And I was like, thank God, because I don't think I'm getting rid of this. I've tried, but I'm not getting rid of this. And I think it's really true. Like the Buddhist practices that we focus on here, they assume a lot. They assume a spiritual maturity and a mental and emotional stability, like kind of on the, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's this like, and this may sound, I don't mean to make it sound like elitist or judgmental, like, well, Buddhism is only for the, spiritual adepts, but to a certain extent, it really is the practices that we tend to focus on about deconstructing our sense of self and letting go and, Dogen and all these kinds of things are pretty, they're pretty profound and kind of subtle and challenging. And it's important to realize that is just a part of Buddhism. And in the West, we have really focused on kind of the pure and the original and the sutras and the teachings and the, in a very in a way that, that Buddhism has not been treated that way throughout its history. Throughout its history, it's had many components. It's had lay people and celebrations and superstitions and talismans and blessings and all kinds of aspects, which we tend to dismiss as, like, that's cultural or superstitious, or that was just kind of an accretion on Buddhism. Fortunately, even in the West, even in Western scholarship, they're really starting to question that, recognizing this was what Westerners did when they said, you know, this Buddhism thing is interesting, let's adopt that. And it's very compatible with our modern scientific, you know, outlook. And it doesn't require any kind of belief, and there's no deities, and, you know. So we just kind of took what made fit with our modern, you know, post-Enlightenment mindset. So there's actually many aspects of Buddhism which we've kind of lost and perhaps need to add back in some of our own cultural features in order to make it a little more beautiful and healing. I mean, one of the aspects that we do have that is healing, I think, are rituals. And so they're not everybody's cup of tea, but there can be something healing about healing and affirming about them in a way that, like, none of the teachings per se that you just read are probably going to make you feel that way. So my example is each year we have Jukai, which is a ceremony where people take the precepts and formally become a Buddhist. And traditionally in our lineage, we have, we don't have yet. Someday when we're much bigger and, you know, whatever, we can pull this off. But Dharma Rain does it every 3 years. This year they will be doing their Dai Jukai retreat. And that involves 5 really big, elaborate ceremonies. And Kyogen, one of my teachers, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but he called it conversion theater. And it's like, there's very elaborate ceremonies, and they're kind of symbolic, and you're physically walking through something. And one of them is, you know, they would set this up in the Zendo basement, this maze, like elaborate maze with like red curtains, and Kakumyo, my Dharma brother, even brought dry ice one year. And there were 3 separate little cubbies. We did them in doorways, and then we kind of build this cubby, and there's 3 different abbots of Zen Center. So we had 2, and somebody would come visit. And you would snake around, you'd be following this procession, and you'd go by one doorway, and you would receive a little slip of paper that says something like, all my past and harmful karma, or something like that. So you are, you know, you receive this piece of paper, and then you keep going along, and then at the second doorway, you give your paper up. There's a bowl and the abbot and an attendant. You give your paper up, and then at the third, there's the two attendants would be alternating, and as you passed, one of them would recite the karma verse for you. Oh, my past and all of them is just. And then as we walked up the stairs, there was somebody who was standing by the bell who would sing, Om to the one who leaps beyond all fear. And once I did that, I mean, I'm not a very devotional person. I'm skeptical. I like my science. I didn't know that I needed that. I didn't know until I walked and they did this for me, and I was like, that kind of, you know, one piece of that self-acceptance slipped into place at that moment. So that's just my example of one way that Buddhism beautifies, treats, and heals. So I'll open it up. Yeah.
I appreciated the Dalai Lama's comment a great deal. And it reminded me that one of the major things that draws me to Buddhism is that it hands me the responsibility of taking care of my practice. And that, I think, really builds your personal foundation for being.
Oh, and that's not even the most powerful ceremony. The Daijukai, the giving of the precepts, is the fifth ceremony. The fourth one, we generally keep secret. I mean, obviously, people who have been through it know about it, but then they keep it secret for the sake of anybody who has not experienced it. So they'll be doing that. And then usually anybody who's going to be taking the precepts, or anyone who is not participating in that ceremony, has a special role during that ceremony.
Is there a way we can adapt that ceremony here? Have it here?
Well, no, nah, not that one. That one's got.
Not the secret one, the other one.
Oh, the like karma-verse one? Oh, and then the three abbots come upstairs and they have a big brazier and they start a fire and they burn all your karma slips and they poke and they poke. And then at some point they all go, ha! Like at the end, and you're just like, I don't know, maybe someday. I mean, or maybe we should just make more of an emphasis to encourage people to go over and participate in Dharma Rain's ceremony, because they're pulling it off. And the cool thing about their Jukai is that, I mean, you don't have to participate in the whole retreat in order to go participate in those ceremonies. So.
For healing, I don't understand why, but I've observed it to be true over and over and over again. Simply offering attention seems to have healing properties. Mm. And if nothing else, just to sit down with your chunk of wall and offer attention to whatever shows up does seem to have that quality.
I think it's beautiful that there's many different paths for many different people. Because I think for those of us who really do, for whom this path really works, who we really love it, and somebody, you know, and if somebody said, well, you know, where's the celebration, where's the beauty, where's the healing, or something, they'd be like, what do you mean? Like, it's all over. Like, in the middle of our silent meditation retreats, it's so beautiful, you know, like, so in a way, it's like, for us, it does lead to that. It's just not, it might not be obvious from the outside while sitting in a silent meditation retreat for 8 hours a day is going to be a really rewarding healing process.
It's just not something that someone's going to tell you. It's when it drops away for you, it drops away.
Yeah.
That ceremony, who knows? Any time, any place. Watch out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does. Not what you're ready for.
True. Anything else? All right, I got a whole stack full of questions to just like periodically just do a Dharma talk addressing questions. So cool. Thank you all.